Jennings again. Marina Gardens gets the message. On Wednesday, the headmaster devoted the morning assembly to the subject of ecology. He spoke of the animals and plants whose existence was at risk because of the worldwide misuse of natural resources. Coming closer to home, he said, "I saw Miss Thorpe in the village yesterday. Those of you who know her will not be surprised to hear that she is very interested in the preservation of the countryside and is making plans to deal with the litter and waste that we see around us. So, on Saturday afternoon, I have arranged that the junior forms will split up into groups and carry out a cleaning-up exercise in and around the village. Miss Thorpe's cottage will be the headquarters of the operation, and the collected rubbish will be taken there and sorted out. She also plans to distribute leaflets to all the houses in the village, asking for their cooperation in the project." Miss Thorpe, of Oak Tree Cottage, was a slightly built lady, with a warm heart and forthright opinions. She was somewhat bird-like in appearance. She moved with the fluttering action of a sparrow evading a tomcat, and spoke in the high-pitched tones of a well-trained minor bird demanding its breakfast. On Saturday afternoon, she stood in her garden, clasping an armful of dustbin bags, as Mr. Carter and Mr. Wilkins arrived with a youthful band of helpers. "Come along, everybody. Lovely to see you," she chirruped, like a blackbird greeting the dawn. "Here you are, boys. Two bags each. One for rubbish and one for recycling. Don't get them mixed up. I suggest we wander round and keep an eye on how things are going," Mr. Carter said to his colleague as the boys hurried off on their search. "Jennings and Derbyshire haven't got here yet, but they shouldn't be long." "Last as usual, they would be," Mr. Wilkins grumbled. "I had to set off without them. Some nonsense about Derbyshire breaking his shoelace. Let's leave them to catch up. I'm not wasting any more time over those two." Derbyshire's missing shoelace had been a problem as the two boys set off in the wake of the official working party. Whenever he tried to run, his left shoe shot off his foot. When they reached the village street, Jennings waited for his friend to catch up. "Oh, come on," he said impatiently. "Can't you go any faster?" Derbyshire hobbled to a halt. "I'm going as fast as I can." "Call that fast?" Jennings scoffed. "I could go faster than that on a wheel-clamped skateboard." By the time they arrived at the cottage, the masters had left, but Miss Thorpe was still in the garden. "Better late than never," she greeted them. "I'm afraid all the dustbin bags have gone, but you can distribute the environment leaflets round the village." Miss Thorpe fluttered into the cottage with bird-like tread and emerged with a large stack of leaflets secured by an elastic band. "All made from recycled paper," she assured them. "I've had 400 copies printed. That should be ample." The leaflets were headed, "Keep Linbury Green." Below were hints on how to prevent household waste. "Handle them carefully, boys," Miss Thorpe advised, thrusting the bundle into Jennings' hands. "You can see they're rather on the fragile side." Fragile they certainly were, as the boys found to their cost when they began their leaflet distribution in Marina Gardens, a residential road of modern houses. Derbyshire's shoelace was still hampering his movements, and Jennings' patience was wearing thin. "You'll have to do something about it, Darby," he said. "We've got 400 leaflets to get rid of, and if you're going to stop and fiddle about with your shoes every 5 yards, we'll never get round the village by tea time." "Sorry, Jen. If only I got a bit of string or something, I should be all right." Derbyshire clenched his toes and screwed up his face. "I'm keeping it on by sheer willpower, but it doesn't work for very long." Jennings thought for a moment and said, "I know what." He slipped the rubber band off the pile of leaflets which he placed on a flat-topped garden gatepost a few feet from where they had stopped. He tossed the band to Derbyshire. "Here, try this." Derbyshire was delighted. He put the band under the sole of his shoe and stretched it up over his instep. He wiggled his toes and found that the makeshift elastic fastening kept his shoe in place reasonably well. "I can switch off my willpower now. I think your idea's absolutely brilliant." The idea was not absolutely brilliant. The leaflets, placed on the gatepost and no longer secured by the rubber band, soared up into the air like a vast flock of birds. Within moments, the road was festooned from end to end with an upsurge of 400 leaflets, swirling and dancing in the wind like autumn leaves. Losing momentum as the gust blew itself out, they parachuted down into the front gardens, enveloping bushes, shrubs, and garden gnomes in a coating of recycled tissue. Along the entire length of the road, front gardens were strewn with litter. A moment later, Mr. Wilkins turned the corner into Marina Gardens and found himself ankle-deep in the remains of 400 tattered pieces of paper, urging the residents to keep the village tidy. To begin with, Mr. Wilkins couldn't make out what had happened. Then he saw Jennings and Derbyshire further along the road. They were standing open-mouthed and wide-eyed with horror.
"Jennings! Derbyshire!" he called loudly. "What in the name of thunder have you been up to?"
Jennings took a deep breath.
"Well, sir, it was like this," he began. "Miss Thorpe gave us some leaflets in a rubber band," Derbyshire put in, anxious to get the details right. "And she told us to put them through everybody's letterboxes. Only we had an accident. It was Derbyshire's shoelaces' fault. We had to take the rubber band off just as the wind came up and..."
"Yes, but look what you've done," Mr. Wilkins broke in. "You've plastered the whole neighbourhood in rubbish."
"Sorry, sir."
"Sorry? So I should think. Go and find the rest of the party," he ordered. "Tell them to stop whatever they're doing and report to me here at once."
"Yes, sir."
Jennings and Derbyshire edged their way through the growing crowd of residents, who by this time had emerged from their houses and were now looking for someone to blame for the avalanche of pollution that had ended up in their front gardens. Mr. Wilkins was the obvious suspect.
"There he is. He knows all about it. That man in the raincoat," a stout lady in an apron informed her neighbours. The crowd edged a little closer.
No. It wasn't me, I assure you," Mr. Wilkins protested. "I didn't get here until after it had happened. Too late to do anything about it, I'm afraid. We're doing a project, you'll see. Tidying up the village, keeping Linbury green."
"Tidying the village?" the stout lady echoed in wrathful disbelief.
"Keeping it green?"
She pointed over the fence of a nearby garden.
"Look at my lawn! It was green enough before you came along. Now it looks more like it's under a 6-inch fall of snow. And look at my gnome! Just look at it!"
Mr. Wilkins looked. In the middle of the so-called snowstorm was a garden gnome sitting on a toadstool and holding a fishing rod. On the hook at the end of its line, a leaflet was impaled. "Keep Linbury green," it read.
"I'm terribly sorry," Mr. Wilkins apologized. "It was just an accident. Two stupid boys."
"It's a criminal offence, dropping litter," said a young woman with a baby in a pram. "We could have you arrested."
"That's right," a man in the crowd confirmed. "Either you start clearing up right away, or we get the police to come and deal with you."
Outnumbered by the indignant householders, Mr. Wilkins had no choice but to obey. Still protesting his innocence, he stooped and picked up the leaflets blowing in the wind about his feet. Although the working party was widely dispersed about the village, Jennings and Derbyshire had no trouble in finding a fair number of them to help with the cleaning-up operation in Marina Gardens. Needless to say, all the scavengers resented the interruption of their labours.
"What's happened, then? Why have we got to go?" they demanded. "It's Jennings' fault," Derbyshire told them. "He let about 50 million bits of paper blow away, and they've all got to be picked up. Old Wilkie's orders. Everyone's got to report to him in Marina Gardens at once."
Grumbling, the members of the working party went off to report to Mr. Wilkins. Their way back to Marina Gardens led Jennings and Derbyshire past Oak Tree Cottage. As they drew level, Miss Thorpe came out into the garden and greeted them over the hedge.
"You have been busy," she said, noticing the boys were empty-handed. "I never thought I'd be able to distribute all those leaflets so quickly. Did you have any problems?"
We didn't quite get all round the village," Jennings admitted, hoping to break the news gently. "But I think everyone in Marina Gardens got the message."
"Well done, boys. You must be exhausted," Miss Thorpe chirruped. "Come indoors and have a glass of milk and a biscuit."
"I'm afraid we can't. Thanks all the same," Jennings told her. "We've got to report to Mr. Wilkins."
"Oh, I'm sure he wouldn't mind, considering how hard you've been working."
She wouldn't take no for an answer. So, with deep misgiving, they followed her indoors, where they became the target of mock attacks from Jason, Miss Thorpe's playful puppy. They were still listening to Miss Thorpe and laughing at the antics of Jason when voices were heard outside in the garden. Mr. Wilkins and his working party, their task accomplished, were returning to base. Miss Thorpe, with Jason bounding ahead, hastened into the garden to greet them. They were followed more slowly by Jennings and Derbyshire looking guilty and trying to brush the telltale biscuit crumbs from their clothing. Mr. Wilkins was smouldering with exasperation and was barely civil in replying to Miss Thorpe's query about the events of the afternoon.
"Frankly, Miss Thorpe, we've had a frustrating and humiliating time, thanks to these two boys." He pointed an accusing forefinger at the culprits. "Why didn't you come to report back to me? What do you mean by going to ground in Miss Thorpe's house when you should have been clearing up the mess with the others?"
"Oh, but they weren't hiding, Mr. Wilkins, I assure you," Miss Thorpe protested. "I invited them in for refreshments as a reward for all their hard work."
Mr. Wilkins swallowed hard in an effort to control his feelings. Venables nudged Temple and said,
"The cheek of it! Sitting there, stuffing themselves and laughing their heads off, while we had to crawl around on our hands and knees doing their dirty work for them."
Temple rounded angrily on Jennings.
"We saw you through the window, guzzling and swigging drinks when we came up the path. Don't try to deny it."
"I wasn't going to," Jennings said humbly. "We'd have come and helped, only it wasn't polite to get away." Mr. Wilkins silenced the argument with a frown.
"I shall deal with you two when I get back to school," he said with icy menace.
Mr. Wilkins was still brooding on the disastrous efforts of Jennings and Derbyshire when they arrived at school, where Mr. Pemberton Oakes was anxious to hear how the project was progressing.
"I'm not letting those two boys take part any more," he told the headmaster. "They made a complete mess of things."
"It's regrettable, of course," Mr. Pemberton Oakes agreed, "and I'll see that they write to Miss Thorpe and apologize. Furthermore, as a punishment, I shall make them report to Miss Thorpe for an afternoon scavenging on Saturdays. It will give them the chance to make up for their irresponsible behavior today." It sounded a fitting punishment, but it wasn't the end of the matter.
Jennings Again was written and adapted by Anthony Buckridge, read by Stephen Fry, and produced by Anne Hines.